broadcasting on the web and locally on 90.1 Hope FM. This is your Election 50.
It's 11 o'clock. I'm Tim Smith, and this is the latest news. Breaking news first, and Houghton and Sunderland South hold the Labour seat. They are the first constituency to announce the results in the UK. In the constituency, Labour won 21,218, UKIP 8,280, Conservative 7,105, Green 1,095, and Lib Dem won 791. They beat Newcastle to the announcement as well as beating their last election announcement time. There was a 7% swing from Labour to UKIP. YouGov have just released their exit poll, suggesting some very different figures than the initial poll. The Liberal Democrats are insisting that the original exit polls don't tally with their figures. The YouGov poll puts them at a predicted 31 seats. The poll is also suggesting the Conservatives have 32 less seats than predicted and Labour have 24 more than first polled. SNP are polling with 10 seats less than projected and Greens have just one predicted seat. The SNP leader Nicola Sturgeon has tweeted that she thinks 58 seats is unlikely, but the Conservative Cabinet Minister Liz Truss is cautiously optimistic.
We had 6 seats in the last Parliament. Our record total ever was 11. So in one sense, 12 would be a good result. But we've set only one target in this election, and that was to win the election in Scotland in terms of seats and votes.
The ballot boxes are arriving in force in South Dorset, which marks the start of the count in Dorset. The returning officer believes there has been a large turnout and it will be a long night. To recap, in 2010 in South Dorset, Conservatives got 45% of the vote, Labour 30% and Lib Dem 19%. The pound surged by 1% against the US dollar to $1.54 after the exit poll was published. According to Chris Beecham, a senior analyst at IG, the much better than expected performance by the Tories electrified markets, sending sterling 150 points up against the US dollar. This will push up FTSE futures. Beecham also made the point that this makes a referendum on whether Britain should stay or leave the EU much more likely. Michael Gove says Cameron would have considerable authority if the exit poll is to go by. Conservative politician Gove said it was too early to talk about potential post-election deals, but if the exit poll proved right, tomorrow the Prime Minister will outline the basis on which we can go forward with a secure and stable government in the national interest. Branksome Recreation Ground in Poole saw long queues of people gathering to cast their vote as the time neared 10 p.m. when polls closed. But an amendment to the Representation of the People Act in 2013 meant that those in a polling station or still queuing outside at the close of poll could still cast their vote. This revision was a response to the hundreds of people who were unable to cast their vote in the 2010 general election.
Thanks ever so much for that, Tim, and you'll be back at 11:30 for your latest news update. So you're back with your Election 15 on 90.1 Hope FM and online streaming around the world. You're listening to Dom and Hannah live from Bournemouth University Talbot Campus.
And tonight we're going to be focusing primarily on Dorset's 8 constituencies. They include Mid Dorset, North Poole, Bournemouth East, Bournemouth West, Poole, Christchurch, North Dorset, South Dorset and West Dorset.
Our live reporters are out and about and will be giving us an insight from counting stations across the county. We'll also be giving you all the election results from across the UK as they happen. We'd love to hear from you tonight and you can tweet us using the hashtag YE15. That's YE15 and start your message with the word radio.
Or alternatively, you can send us a message via Facebook. Just search for Your Election 15 and post a message on our wall, beginning with the word radio. But first, we are joined by our chief news reporter, Betty Glover, who will be updating us on today's political landscape. So, what have you got for us, Betty?
Hi, guys. Good evening. Well, as you know, polling stations have now closed and the votes are being counted. Today, we have seen people casting their votes at around 50,000 polling stations. The inevitability of the whole process ending before dawn breaks is very slim. However, instead, it might just be the calling of the half-time whistle. One prospect we can predict is that by 3 a.m. enough Scottish seats will be in to give Labour a clear sense of the support that is needed from England and Wales. This will be the chance for the electorate to see whether Miliband regrets stating that he would not go into coalition with any other party. For the Tories, as the night wears on, the party will hope for some successful defences in ultra-marginals to boost their prospects, such as Scotland South, Pudsey and Ipswich.
So how likely do you think it is that we will see Conservatives pushed out of Westminster?
Well, Dom, what we are really looking at here is how the anti-Tory miners give support to the Labour Party. By this, I mean how Plaid, SDLP and the Greens, alongside the SNP, win their likely seats. If Labour and the SNP win their targeted amount of seats, then between them, they can vote Conservatives out of office with support from the anti-Tory miners.
And how confident are the leaders looking at the moment?
Well, Hannah, of course, we cannot expect to see any of the leaders showing any signs of defeat, even if they do believe the end is nigh. We have Cameron explaining that the Tories can win the election outright, Miliband remaining hopeful that the public have made the right judgment, whilst Clegg shows confidence in his candidates, believing that they will hold enough seats to be key players in any negotiations. So, judging by that, clearly each party expects to win, but would we expect anything less?
No, I suppose we wouldn't. Thanks very much for Betty. We'll be back with you again just after 12.
Yeah, brilliant. See you then.
Thanks very much. See you later. Now, it might be a surprise to know that we actually have a team in Westminster tonight who are going to be reporting live from the main political hub of the UK.
We're now joined by our Westminster reporter, Ben Fisher, who can give us some context to the leadership race. Ben, what are your predictions ahead of tonight's results?
Hello. Just in Westminster, just actually on Parliament Square at the moment, where the atmosphere is certainly building. Obviously, there's been a big reaction to the exit polls, and certainly seems a lot of sort of shock around just people walking up and down past you in the street, and the support for David Cameron, the Conservative Party, really does look quite strong at this stage and usually predictable. So I think that's sort of the biggest aspect of what we're seeing around here at the moment.
Hi, Ben. When do you think we'll start to hear results from some of the leaders' seats?
Well, we're hearing stuff onwards from 1 a.m. We're going to hear about the sort of the declaration of the constituencies and exactly what's happening. In terms of the actual around here, we're not expecting sort of the results until much later in the day or in the early hours, if you like, towards sort of 4 and 5 a.m.
And is there any way that one of the parties could win a majority, or is this totally out of the question?
A majority, well, the Conservatives are 10 seats off a majority, and I think the sort of the general consensus, certainly around here, and the general feeling is that it's going to be another hung parliament and another coalition. It looks as though quite a few people, just been speaking to some protesters who have voted for the Greens, and they seem rather disappointed that their vote may have actually sort of swung in David Cameron's favour and perhaps keeping him in parliament, albeit as part of a coalition.
Well, thanks, Ben. We'll come and speak to you later on in the show. Enjoy things in Westminster, and we'll be back to you later.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So one of the key marginal seats this evening is the Mid Dorset and North Pool. We spoke to Dan and Stephen earlier. Unfortunately, Annette was not with us, but without further ado, Annette Brookes joins us right now. How are you?
Oh, I'm very well. I've had a very hard and busy day, but I hope it's going to be worth it.
I'm sure it will. So you held that seat for, what was it, 15?
14 years.
14 years. It's obviously one of the key marginal seats. How do you think the Liberal Democrats are going to fare?
It's going to be close, I'm sure. I know that we couldn't have done more than we've done to try to hold it. And I just hope for the sake of democracy, really, because I'm not surprisingly, I'm not really sold on this idea that every parliamentary seat should be turned blue in Dorset.
Okay, and we're also joined by two very handsome fellas in the studio as well. If you'd like to introduce yourselves, we have David and...
Douglas.
Douglas. You two are here to shed some light on the seat as well.
Yeah, I believe that we are, yes. What I'm interested in is, as it's a marginal, the effect that might have later on in the evening. I'm a constitutional lawyer here at Bournemouth University, and I'm very interested to see what will happen when coalitions and other agreements try to be formed. And I think this seat, as a marginal, will be key in working out who the Conservatives try and coalition with, or indeed who the other parties try and do that with as well, depending on what happens here.
Thank you, Dave.
I totally agree, and as a student as well, you know, I think the Lib Dems would want the student votes, and we don't know what's going to happen this time, interestingly, so I think that would be a seat to look at.
And Annette, back over to you. How do you think the Liberal Democrats will fare nationally tonight? Obviously, the exit polls would suggest that you should be deterred and a little bit sort of disheartened and discouraged, but how are you feeling ahead of tonight's results?
Well, I wasn't expecting a great night tonight, but I wasn't expecting the very, very sad results shown in the exit poll. We've been in a situation for this election where effectively we've been concentrating all our efforts into about 60 seats. So we inevitably are going to be quite low in national opinion polls because if you're taking a cross-section right across the country, it will average out to quite a low figure. Whereas in our held seats, we've certainly been in our constituency, we've been really successful in every council election that's come our way. We've proven ourselves on the ground, and our support certainly feels as if it's really high. But it's a different ball game with more parties in the game than in previous elections. UKIP's likely to be a bigger feature than before. For the first time in my standing for an MP, we have a Green candidate for the general election. So votes are going to be split. It's interesting to hear about the student vote. I was canvassing and I met a first-time voter, and she really wanted to talk to me. And I could tell her heart wanted to vote Green, but her head was telling herself that she didn't actually want the Conservative to win. And I just could not bring myself to really, really sock the tactical vote argument because I was thinking, really, you should be voting for your heart when you're 18. And you know, I need this vote. So I ended up saying, what I think you really ought to do is to email both Vicky and the Green candidate with some of your questions, because I was very confident that Vicky would come back with the best answers. So I hope she did that.
You see, that's an interesting talking point, which I'm pretty sure that David and Douglas are here to discuss, is the fact that in terms of that, and your local MP and being in contact and being able to just drop them an email, you know, students our age, is there really that sort of engagement with sort of MPs in your local constituency, young voters in particular? How are we engaging with politics, or are we engaging with politics, and how can that change?
As a student who studies politics, I think it's very easy for us to engage with politicians. I think for those who don't study politics, it's quite difficult, especially with the media. I study politics and media, so we get to see the both sides of the world. And obviously, media sometimes doesn't portray politicians very well. And it's easy for the media to do that because it's news. So people are interested, you know, and that way sometimes people get a misconception of what politics and politicians are, and that because of this kind of disillusion, they actually have they disengage from politics. And also, I think there are students out there who want to engage with politicians, but politicians don't see that as well. So it's got to be a two-way system. Mm-hmm. And I think now, though, I think when students know that their voices are getting heard by politicians, actually, they engage a lot more. So things like social media, Twitter, for example, definitely, it's very personal to some extent. As Annette was saying, you know, emails as well. Mm-hmm. If you get a reply, I think it's because you get a reply, you want to engage more. So you know they're at least listening.
Absolutely. It's all about trying to create a conversation, I think, between constituents and their MPs. And social media in particular, I think, has had a really positive effect on this. Because there is that ability to engage in the dialogue. And even if the news is not reporting that kind of thing is going on, if you can go onto your phone, go onto Twitter, and say something to your MP and you get a reply, but that's great. I mean, there's alternative channels, and constitutionally speaking, it's interesting. There are a lot of the eroded trust in Parliament that you've seen over the past few years is to an extent being clawed back through alternative channels, and that's something in the years to come that I think is well worth keeping an eye on.
Well, thank you ever so much, Annette, David, Douglas, for joining us this evening. Enjoy the rest of the night. You're gonna see it through to the early hours of the morning?
Unfortunately, yes.
Yes. Well, take care. Thanks ever so much. If you'd like to make your way out of this sweaty sauna that this studio is becoming, I do apologise for that. It's only going to get worse as the night goes on.
Okay, breaking news. The first result of the night has come through in Sunderland. Labour's Bridget Phillipson holds on to her seat in Holton and Sunderland South. Now, our very talented social media presenter, Charlie Souter Phillips, is here with us now for an update of all things online.
Hey, guys.
Hello, Charlie. How are you doing?
I'm all right.
Still fresh?
Yeah, for a bit
since
longer.
Since the last hour we saw you, how have things been going?
So, obviously, the exit poll has happened. So, that's the biggest thing trending at the moment. That is going crazy. The majority of people aren't actually happy with it. But in particular, one Paddy Ashdown, he actually said that he'll publicly eat his hat if the exit poll results come through.
I'd love to see that.
Funny. So, that's been trending all over the place. And there's actually already been an account made called Paddy's Hat. Yeah.
That's speedy work.
These things are so quick to take off on Twitter. It's mad.
It is crazy. So hopefully that will keep me busy, keep me going busy all night. And they already have 3,000 comments on that thing, which will be weird if he does actually have to eat his hat.
Hopefully I hope he does. I think everyone wants to see that.
Yeah.
I do.
Another thing that's gone viral is this Taiwan animation video. There's been an animation video to sort of explain what's how our election works and what's been going on and stuff, but it's the weirdest thing. It involves like David Cameron pushing a pram with I think Ed Miliband's head in it. I'm not really sure.
Nice.
They're not the best animation pictures, but yeah, that's been going viral. So yeah, and there's also been more than a million clicks on the voter post on Facebook. I don't know if you've seen it. You sort of share a status to say I'm a new voter and I voted today, and yeah, it's optional whether you sort of say who you wanted to vote for or not, but there's been over a million clicks on that.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much, Charlie, and we're going to be speaking to you again at roughly around 12:15. Enjoy the next hour. What's next on the way for you?
TV.
Yeah. Go and see how they're doing. Say hi from us upstairs in
we'll
radio
do, we'll do. See you later.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, so this is a tweet that we have just received from our political playlist. This is by Rhys Pope, and he said, "The timeless political classics are making a change to average election coverage. What great coverage."
Thank you, Mr. Rhys Pope. That guy, he's so generous. He's actually sat opposite me right now, just giving him a wave through the glass. Across Dorset, many political candidates have found it a tough haul finding voters. With a fair few candidates standing for the election, there's no doubt it can be very difficult to stand out from the crowd.
Now, one of our reporters went down to Wimborne to speak to a few local people to see if they could name any of the candidates standing in their constituency.
If we're being sympathetic, we could say that being a politician is hard work. And in Wimborne, it just got a little more difficult. Why? Because the people we spoke to could not name a single candidate.
No idea at all. And I'm quite interested in politics. Okay. But I have no idea.
Local one, I don't know, tell the truth. Yeah.
No. Okay. Not at the moment. I don't. I haven't lived here very long, and actually I don't know anything about any of them.
I don't know all the candidates because there are a lot of people on the town council. Are we having an election for the district council and the county council? I'm not too sure.
Voters here may not have been able to name their local candidates, but they did know what kind of personality traits they're looking for.
I look for an understanding of the local economy, an understanding of local people, an understanding of what the job opportunities would be and how things like new roads might disrupt an economy or the local town.
They've been in the community for a number of years. They may have a local business, or they've done a lot of community work over a number of years, just well known to everyone.
Somebody who's honest and who really belongs and understands the place they're trying to represent.
I'd like to actually see them. They don't come around to the door. It's like shopping online or going to the store. When I go to the store, I get a better view of what what it's really all about. I mean, I will buy things online, but a candidate, someone who really I need to trust and puts a leaflet through the door or communicates via email, not making enough effort.
So with the election getting closer, it seems all those standing have their work cut out.
Over the past 6 weeks, there have been several talking points when it comes to the young voters across Britain. From student tuition fees to the housing crisis, young people haven't held back from voicing their opinions. Hollywood actor and comedian Russell Brand has caused a lot of commotion with his opinions on UK politics. Talking on his daily YouTube podcasts called Trues, Russell has had the opportunity to sit down with several candidates to grill them on their policies over the last few weeks.
So with Russell in mind, next we go to Bournemouth multimedia journalism student Tom Beasley to see if politics has any room for comedy at all.
Comedy is serious business at this general election. Russell Brand has stepped from the stand-up comedy stage to the political battlefield with his YouTube show, The Trues. His interviews with the likes of Ed Miliband and Caroline Lucas of the Green Party have drawn a mixture of compliment and criticism. Comedy has also taken its spot on the ballot paper. Al Murray is standing against Nigel Farage in South Thanet in his pub landlord persona. Hayden Prowse, co-creator of The Revolution Will Be Televised, is also standing for election. He has changed his name by deed poll to stand as an imitation of Michael Green, the businessman alter ego of Conservative chairman Grant Shapps. Prowse spoke to our reporter Katrina Quick about the role of comedy in politics.
One of the reasons young people are disengaged from politics is they see how ridiculous it is, and by satirising it, you're able to connect with them. There's a sense in which everyone feels curated and forced and fake because they have to present themselves in a certain way, and I think young people are a bit more honest than a certain way, so if you satirise it, it feels a bit more honest.
Adam Kay, frontman of comedy music act Amateur Transplants, is more sceptical.
There will be a way that comedy can get more young people involved with politics, but I don't think it's there yet. And it certainly doesn't involve a stand-up comedian with a burgeoning TV career standing as a joke candidate.
Despite his scepticism, Kay does note that comedy has a role to play in influencing politicians.
Politicians can learn from comedians that you don't have to be dry and stale, and if you're better at communicating and speaking to young people in a language they understand, and comedy is a good shorthand for that, then that will help them. But that's different to being a comedian standing as a Member of Parliament.
It's not clear whether comedians on the ballot paper will have their presence felt in politics. For Kay, though, voter awareness is a goal worth fighting for.
I would rather the comedian say, go and vote, that was great, and I'd rather comedians say, here are the options. I think that would probably ultimately be more successful than either running for office or making sort of grand Russell Brand proclamations.
This is Tom Beasley reporting for Your Election 15.
OK, some more breaking news. The second seat has been decided, with Julie Elliott holding her seat in Sunderland Central.
We're back with our expert panel, Doug and David. So, guys, do you think there's any place for comedy in politics?
Wow. That's a tough one, actually. Because I think comedy does take away, kind of, to some extent, the intellectual side of politics. I see it as it's a very entertaining side of politics. You know, have I got news for you and stuff like that, that a lot of young people, maybe old people, get engaged with. But it doesn't tell kind of the more, let's say, important side of politics. It's always scrutinising it. That's what comedy is. It's scrutinising politicians, politics, policies, for example. And people actually don't see the serious side of politics, and I think that takes away from it. So when it comes to, you know, knowing about policies from parties, for example, I think people don't actually understand the real issues that need to be addressed.
So Russell Brand, he isn't the first comedian to have been vocal during this election campaign. Other examples include Joe Brand and Steve Coogan, who both came out in support of Labour. So do you think that these celebrity endorsements go any way to swaying people's votes?
I don't think so, actually. I think the celebrity endorsements, if you are someone who very much likes a particular kind of comedy, you will often actually have a particular view on politics in the first place. So I'm not sure those views will influence you so much, because coming in from what Doug said, I do think that instead of making politics less serious, I think it personalises it, and comedy enables you to bring out the personalities of politicians more effectively. I think if you have a particular view on life expressed through comedy, politicians who are able to laugh at themselves and to actually realise, well, look, I'm a human being, and yes, I fell off the stage and it was quite funny, and you know, who come up with slightly comedy catchphrases accidentally, like, hell yes, I'm tough enough, and then that becomes a bit of a thing. You know, I think that's really important. Politics isn't purely about really serious issues, because ultimately it's done by humans. I think comedy is quite important for that part of it.
Yeah, I agree. And to some extent, that I think, you know, for example, Russell Brand, that he did interviews recently with Ed Miliband, for example, and backing Labour. I would say, you know, then he does a video saying you should vote. And I think, well, if people listen to Russell Brand in the first place saying they don't vote, they wouldn't even have registered. So how can they actually go out and vote? I see it, you know. Comedy, it's great to some extent, but people will take it seriously in terms of comedians and what they say. And if people do, you know, there's no statistics, obviously, but I think if people did believe and agreed with Russell Brand in the first place, and for him to, you know, 2 days before elections to say vote for Labour, I don't think that really helps much in terms of voting.
I wonder, though, if Russell Brand's a bit of a strange case with what he's doing, because throughout history, that's a very grand statement, isn't it? since the dawn of time, men have been funny and so have women. What I'm trying to say is that throughout British political history, the role of the satirist has been incredibly important in actually holding people to account. I think Russell Brand is a fairly particular kind of person. He's not my cup of tea, but I think his impact on politics, such that he's had an impact, is a little bit of a one-off, and it's not in keeping with that tradition of actually real engagement with politics through comedy. Think about things like Private Eye and Punch magazine, and, you know, William Hogarth as well, the great caricaturist, cartoonist, who are actually able to comment very much on society and politics and present very biting satire that was actually an important part of engaging the public. I mean, Private Eye, the famous headline, "Kill an RG, win a Metro," during the Falklands War, for instance, actually really summed up a lot of people's feelings about the reporting and reaction to that conflict.
Two really interesting viewpoints there, chats. Thanks ever so much for joining us, Doug and David. I'm sure we'll see you at some point again throughout the evening. We'll be throwing you in as an emergency panel just to give us a little bit more of an insight on many of those topics. So to kind of conclude, David, for you, you're saying that comedy can work in politics to encourage involvement, whereas Doug, you're saying that perhaps engagement needs to come at a slightly earlier phase, you know, rather than just a comedic effect. We need to be doing more to encourage young voters in the first place, rather than just using satirical things like "Have I Got News For You" and "Private Eye" and success, albeit, you know, there still needs to be more to encourage young voters.
Yeah.
Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, sounds about right to me.
Excellent. So what have you chaps got coming up later on in your evening? Where are you off to next?
Well, I'm off downstairs. I'm off to the television studio, where I'll be on another panel talking about the elections, part of this Your Election 2015 event.
Excellent.
Doug, I'm not sure what you're up to.
Same as me. I think I'll be talking about immigration downstairs.
So. Pivotal question, of course. In terms of medium, do you prefer the TV coverage or the radio coverage?
Choose your answer wisely, guys.
Well, of course, I prefer the radio.
Excellent answer
from
David.
We love to hear that.
Yeah, the radio is so much better. It's more conversational.
Do you know what? You two can come again. The answer's like that is absolutely fantastic. Well, enjoy the rest of your evening. Hope it goes well. Hopefully we will see you at some point later on.
Hopefully.
Enjoy TV.
All right.
And thanks ever so much for joining us, guys.
Thank you.
The time is just approaching 11:30, which means it's now time for your latest news updates.
Broadcasting on the web and locally on 90.1 Hope FM. This is your Election 15.
It's 11:30, I'm Tim Smith, and this is the latest news. Firstly, more breaking news. Labour hold the Sunderland seat with Julie Elliott elected the MP. Labour won 20,958 with an increased majority and Conservative 9,780. Labour has won two seats so far. Houghton and Sunderland South were the first results in with a hold for Labour. In the constituency, Labour won 21,218, UKIP 8,280, Conservative 7,105, Green 1,095 and Lib Dem won 791. They beat Newcastle to the announcement as well as beating their last election announcement time. There was a 7% swing from Labour to UKIP, who took second place. Lib Dems came last and lost their deposit. The latest polls suggest that Conservative will win 316, Labour 239, SNP 58 and Lib Dems 10. Lib Dem President Baroness Brinton says her party had been underestimated for the last month in the polls.
When there have been polls looking at key marginals between Lib Dems and Labour or Lib Dems and the Conservatives, we've done much better than that. So I would be astonished if we only had 10 seats at the end of the night.
The pound has risen 1 pence against the dollar after the first exit poll. The currency rose to $1.541 as preliminary results were announced. UKIP ran the most positive campaign of the election, the British Election Leaflet Project has suggested. Labour ran the most negative leaflet campaign, closely followed by Lib Dems. The project looked at 1,300 pieces of election literature from nearly 300 constituencies. UKIP leader Nigel Farage tweeted that he was proud to have run the most positive campaign. Within a mock election at Ferndown Upper School in Dorset, UKIP came out on top. The voting simulation saw the Conservatives come in second with 62 votes and Labour were third with a total of 31 votes. The South Dorset UKIP candidate Malcolm Shakespeare has told the Dorset Echo that he was very pleased with how the campaign went and is feeling hopeful for the outcome of the election. The returning officer thinks there will be a declaration for South Dorset between 4 and 5am. All of the ballot boxes have now arrived at the lighthouse in Poole. There are around 150 members of staff working at tonight's Bournemouth count. There have been 250 staff members at the polling stations throughout the day. The approximate timetable says that the counting of the general election votes will not begin until around 12:15am. More than 1 million Facebook users have shared the site's new button, I Voted Today. The button was revealed yesterday and since then has been used by more than 1.2 million users. More on social media, and conversation about the general election has doubled since the announcement of the exit polls, Facebook tells ITV. The amount of chatter about the election doubled in just 2 minutes, the social media company says. That's all for now. You're up to date. Join us again at midnight.
Thanks ever so much for that, Tim. You're listening to Your Election 15. The time has just gone 33 minutes past 11. We're live on 90.1 Hope FM, and you're listening to Dom and Hannah from Bournemouth University, bringing you all of the latest election results throughout the night. We're mainly focusing on Dorset's 8 constituencies, but we'll also be providing live coverage of election results across the UK as they come in.
So stay tuned for expert analysis, student opinion and political debate brought to you by Bournemouth University students.
But first, we're joined live by our political editor, Alex Folkard, who will be providing us with political commentary throughout the night.
That's right, I'm in the sweltering radio room, nonchalantly sipping on a cup of coffee.
You've just walked in with so much suave and swagger about you.
I might have to undo a button in a minute. But yes, as we've heard, the first results are in. Houghton and Sunderland South has been held by Labour, and Sunderland South also being held by the Band and Miliband. Historically, Houghton and Sunderland South is always the first to declare. It's the 70th safest seat. So an unsurprising hole for Labour there. But back to the exit polls for now. One thing the exit polls are agreeing on is a huge victory for the SNP. With Sturgeon at the helm, polls predict they'll secure the majority of seats north of the border. Conservatives are polling above the odds. Lib Dems are languishing with a predicted 10 seats and the Greens could take 2. Earlier, the BBC poll put the Tories on 316, 10 short of an outright majority. However, the YouGov poll is calling it a much tighter race. YouGov polls the Tories on 284, Labour on 263, SNP on 48, Lib Dems on 31, UKIP on 2 and Greens on 1. Lib Dems could be the biggest loser, with indications that they could drop 47 seats. However, the polls couldn't be more conflicting at the moment, but we'll bring you the first concrete results shortly. For the first flood of results, join me in an hour, every hour.
And breathe. You did well, Alex.
Wow.
It's been quite the evening, hasn't it? As your Election 15's political editor, just describe to us your role this evening. What have you been up to?
I'm trying to keep on top of everything, to be honest. We're getting results through on the wire, so I'm constantly watching the wire. I'm going to try to bring you exit polls. I'm going to bring you a constituency by constituency. So it's going to be a long night, but hopefully an enjoyable one.
Alex, it's great to hear from you as always, buddy. Enjoy the rest of your evening. Try and fit time for more coffee in there as well to keep going. Thanks ever so much for joining us.
And we'll see you in the next hour. Okay, the latest breaking news is that Labour's Sharon Hodgson has held her seat in Washington and Sunderland West with a majority of 13,157.
Now, describing a political party in three words. It seems a simple task, but with lots of strong opinions out there on this year's election, can the public manage it?
Our Comedy Coalition team took to the streets to find out.
The Tories will actually be much better for us economically.
Describe your feelings towards UKIP in three words.
Not sure.
Labour.
Well, I've always voted Liberal Democrat.
What about UKIP?
Yeah, they're pretty good as well.
Perhaps it should have happened a long time ago.
SNP.
No, definitely not.
SNP. Nicola Sturgeon, a bit too full of herself.
Labour?
No.
Don't like. Immigration would be the obvious one.
How do you feel about Green Party in three words?
I like the person who's up for election this time.
I have no trust, but perhaps not. Oh no, it's more than two.
Absolutely rubbish. Sorry.
My other tempting one is the Greens.
With the youth vote a huge topic of discussion in the run-up to the election, it will be interesting to see where undecided voters have placed their faith for the next 5 years.
Joining us in the studio is our student focus group, made up of Zoe, Sam and Joe. Thank you for joining us this evening, guys.
So, guys, was it a tough decision on the day, and who did you finally give your vote to?
Yeah, well, I was undecided up until the very last second. I feel like as a student I should vote for Green Party, but ended up going with Labour because it just seemed like their goals are more realistic.
And Sam?
I voted Conservatives in the end. Again, it was a really, 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 really difficult decision, torn between Conservatives, Green and Lib Dem. But I think Conservatives overall have probably the country in the safest hands. So it was Conservative who I eventually decided for.
I also went with Conservatives. I didn't find it too difficult to decide because I was really just waiting for one of the other parties to convince me to go with something different from the last 5 years. But I think Conservatives have done a good job over that time.
Okay, so you're not alone, don't worry, in being apprehensive of where to put your vote. There are many people out there like you. You're just the three unlucky souls that we picked to go on air. What made you so apprehensive to put your faith in any of the political parties to begin with? Starting with you, Sam, if you were.
I think, well, in general, a lot of people have lost faith in the political system, and so it's quite a tricky situation in which a lot of young people especially don't really know where to place their trust. Especially with Lib Dems breaking their promises on tuition fees, it's quite difficult for us to decide which party really has our best interests at heart and which are just kind of like trying to get our vote but are going to go back on their promises. So, I mean, it's a tricky decision for everyone, but especially for students at this time with the tuition fees and the increases. So I think it was a really kind of difficult decision for a lot of the student body. And I think a lot of students are going to have had a difficult decision, especially, I mean, Green Party probably put the students out there in front in terms of how they're valued. But again, are their promises realistic? I don't know.
Thank you.
And do you think that young voters are struggling to make that connection with politicians and politics in general?
I think in general, probably yes. But I think this election's been a bit different in the sense that you've seen a lot of social media interaction. I mean, with Facebook's campaign to get people to share when they voted, I think that was really good. There's been more discussion about it, hashtags used on Twitter. So there is more of a conversation about it. so that's really good. I think things are moving in the right direction.
Definitely. Zoe, what made you so apprehensive as to putting your faith into one particular political party?
I think it's hard because they're bringing up so many topic areas like taxes and what we should be taxing, what we shouldn't be taxing. And for students, a lot of it doesn't apply to us. So we're voting on like the one tiny part of something that we like, and then you read all of this other negative stuff about it and you're thinking, is this really what I want for the country? And you just kind of want to cherry pick the best parts of every party.
Certainly. And Joe?
I find it quite difficult because there are some things like Green should naturally be a party that students are really interested in because they're, you know, getting want to scrap tuition fees and that. But you do have to wonder whether it is actually possible for them to do that. They come out with a lot of promises and a lot of things that I didn't really know whether they would be able to keep.
Well, we're glad that you all managed to arrive at a decision in the end, and thank you ever so much for joining us. I'm sure we'll be speaking to you guys later on in the show.
Thank you.
In the meantime, enjoy the rest of the evening. Try and get caught up in the excitement of it all.
Will do.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. So now in the studio, we have Dan Jackson and Paddy here to talk to us about how the results have unfolded so far.
And we're also joined by Shelley as well. So if you guys want to take a seat.
We'll just swap over the guests. This is always that awkward stage where I should probably fill for a little longer. So hello, thanks for joining Dan, Shelley and Paddy, who's got his sticker. I knew someone was going to do it. We've got name badges on, and Paddy, you've decided to put yours on your head. That's okay.
I'm radio friendly.
Okay, so thanks ever so much for joining us, guys.
Okay, so by this point, only a trickling of results have come through, but have any constituencies surprised you so far, or do you think there'll be any shock results?
Well, there will be shock results tonight, to answer your question. Absolutely no shock so far in terms of the ones that have been called, certainly the two in the northeast. Labour always win. And of course, the Sunderland got there first, as they always do.
Yep.
So far, so predictable. However, I don't think this is the end of the story. Obviously, the exit polls have put a cat amongst that pigeon, certainly, as if it needed complicating anymore. And now we've just had another exit poll from YouGov, which is quite different to the one from the BBC and all of the rest. So the only thing we know for certain is that it will be unpredictable all night.
So obviously we're placing a lot of emphasis down here in Dorset, but if we take a moment to look sort of across the UK as a whole, where are those key battles? I know we have a marginal seat down here in Dorset, but where else are the real scale tipping points sort of across the UK, Shelley?
Oh my God, we've got lots and lots and lots of races that we want to be watching. We've got our sort of top 10 that we've got, obviously here, the Mid-Dorset and North Pool, Sheffield Hallam, because I mean we don't know what's going to happen there, and that's going to be a really important one to be watching. And of course the Thanet South. So those are just three of the ones that we're kind of keeping an eye on in our top 10.
Excellent. And Paddy, for you, where do you see tonight's results heading? Is it as expected so far? Too early to tell whether it's going to be a hung parliament by the morning?
It's unlikely that, you know, that even if the Conservatives are do as well as the current as the BBC poll have them doing, which would be an extraordinarily good night for David Cameron. A governing party has not increased its share of seats in the House of Commons since Margaret Thatcher in 1983. So it's that historic, etc. At the same time, it's cataclysmically awful for Labour. We knew they were going to do badly in Scotland. They're on course to lose all but one seat north of the border. Why have they done so badly? I mean, there are a lot of very very close marginals. I think the BBC exit poll have the Libs, you know, only having one more seat than the DUP, being at 10, and then the YouGov one had them holding on to, what was it, 34?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
There are lots of seats that are very much on a knife's edge. We'll see that in the course of the night.
And I think one of the explanations for the Labour problem is they seem to have been caught between two nationalisms. You know, on the one hand, the Scottish wave of nationalism, and then, of course, in England, there's also been a kind of nationalistic surge against that very Scottish surge there, which Labour find themselves attached to, because they are likely to be the partners in any coalition, of course, not coalition agreement or whatever it is that they would have gone into government with. So I think they've been potentially squeezed in that scenario. Sorry, I should keep using those words because, you know, there's two different exit polls now, which show actually very different results. You know, if the YouGov one is correct, that would be okay for Labour, and they would still have the best chance of getting in a coalition. But the second, the YouGov exit poll also has the Lib Dems on 30 seats, you know, as opposed to 10. Mm. So this is a very different outcome.
Yeah, it's not quite as those two sort of exit polls had been very similar, I think everyone would be in perhaps a more confident position to speculate right now as to where we'd be laying at sort of 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, as opposed to it is all very much still very unpredictable. So what lies on the horizon for the three of you this evening? What are you looking forward to? What are you going to do next?
Please don't say go to bed.
No, we're not going to bed just yet. There's too many things still outstanding for us to kind of be able to rest our heads easy. So, I mean, I think the polls, as Dan was saying, because they're so different, they're really telling in terms of today's election and why we're looking at such a difficult decision for the voters and for the country going ahead. So lots more surprises in store. So stay tuned. Watch this space. Mm.
Exactly. Stay tuned to your election 15, would you not say?
Absolutely. Hashtag YE15.
No, there look at that. Let's Brilliant. Get some social interaction. Thanks so much for joining us again. It'll be great to hear from you more later on. I know, Dan, this is your second appearance already in a very short show so far. So it'd be great to hear from you guys later. Enjoy the rest of the evening. Watch out for those key marginal seats and come back and be our experts later on and keep us up to date with how things are going.
Gotcha. Thanks so much.
Thanks again, guys. Cheers.
Okay, since 2010, the surge in popularity for UKIP has taken the media as well as the everyday voting public by storm.
Nigel Farage led the party to victory in 2014 European elections, taking the win from both Conservative and Labour MEPs, a first in modern political history.
So how will they fare tonight? Abir Al-Amar has been looking into how the rising party has prepared for the election.
Would you like to support UKIP? Here's a brochure for you.
In this constituency alone, the latest polls suggest a 14% rise in UKIP support since the last general elections in 2010. It's probably still not enough for them to take the seat, which is still looking like a two-horse race between the Conservatives and the Liberal Democrats. But John Butler, who is a chairman of UKIP in Mid-Dorset and North Pool, is still optimistic that what he says UKIP stands for resonates with electorates.
We are really the people's army of Britain. We're prepared to listen to what people actually want. We're not imposing ideas on them. We're not saying, you must do this, you must do that. We're there to listen to people. We're there to take their views on board. And we want to give people as much say in local politics as possible through local referenda.
Part of this campaign is going out and about meeting people. That said, it's going to be an uphill struggle for UKIP to win this seat. Nonetheless, an army of volunteers are on the street canvassing for our votes. Malcolm Craig is a social worker and he joined UKIP 5 months ago.
I think this has been the only genuine party I've ever worked with. They generally mean what they've said. Well, the campaign of UKIP, it was to really undermine the Conservatives and the Labour Party. My opinion, we'll get about 150 MPs into the House of Commons.
It's a somewhat ambitious target, but there is no doubt that support for UKIP is bigger than it has been in previous elections.
So, the couch potato of the Eurelection 15 team is back in the studio. Matt,
hello.
It's just coming up to midnight. What have you been tuned into and what's your opinion been on the coverage so far?
I can see the jealousy just running through you and it's great. I've been tuned into Sky News for the first sort of hour since the polls have come through. It's actually been quite good, I think, as you'd expect. It's tried to be quite impartial. They've obviously got to get all of the sort of political spectrum across. They've had Natalie Bennett from the Green Party come in. They've had Ed Balls and a number of others. Sort of, they've got people from every party. One thing I did quite enjoy, Ed Miliband came on and he was questioned by the reporter. Ed Balls came on and he was questioned by the reporter about Miliband, based on the exit polls, obviously a lot of people, well, a lot of suggestions are starting to say, you know, they might not, he won't be prime minister next time. And he was saying, you know, is he the right man to take you forward? Ed Balls obviously couldn't say anything. He was quite strong and he didn't give much away, but he did the sort of typical politician answer of just saying, you know, we'll wait and see. It's been quite a good mix of cynicism and information. Obviously, they've had to question, but they don't want to just sound like they're attacking, you know. To be honest, politicians have got enough on their plate this evening without getting, you know, constant barrages of, you know, what you're going to do next when you lose your seat and all that. So it's been a good mix of sort of firm questioning, but information as well. The statistics have been a bit ropey. We've had BBC News on the TV in our room, and I've had Sky on my laptop. And obviously, when the results were coming through, BBC were saying, you know, where the swing was going, how many more votes, you know, what was the rise and fall between votes. Sky was a little bit shakier. There wasn't as much there, but there's lots of reporters on there. There's been good cuts between them. They're in the vital places. So no, it's been good, but we'll have to go on to somewhere else and sample something else now and see how it compares.
I can't believe that your role for the evening is just sat watching the different TV coverage.
You'd be surprised. It sounds very easy.
Is it quite hard? Is it quite taxing? as being on air for 12 hours straight, is it, Matt?
It's not taxing. For a start, I have to get my own coffee, whereas you don't.
Well, that is
true. You've got coffee people for you. But no, it's quite warm in there, and just staring at a computer, it does get you quite drowsy. I've had my first yawn of the night, which is never a good sign. I've had a couple of cups of coffee, so...
10 to 12, your first yawn of the night.
Yeah, it's not 10 hours to go. It's not particularly the best sign, is it?
10 hours to go. Yeah. Matt, it's wonderful talking to you,
Thank
as
you very
always.
Much.
Thanks so much for joining us.
I'll catch you in an hour.
You crack on back to your
telly. Oh, I will.
And we will catch you in an hour. Take care,
Thank
buddy.
Thank you very much.
So as we mentioned earlier on in the hour, we're here at Hope FM, and we've come up with a musical playlist filled with a crate of political hits.
That's right, Dom. We've compiled a playlist of our top political songs to help us get in the party political mood.
So far, you've heard music from Dream and from The Jam, and we have 13 more political songs to play for you. Through the night, if you think of any political songs with context, all things politics, we'd love to hear from you.
You can get in touch with us by tweeting your suggestions to @YourElection15 and start your tweet with the word radio.
Our third song on the playlist is Bob Dylan with The Times Are Changing, followed by UB40, 1 in 10.
Come gather round, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown.
I had a poster of Bob Dylan in my bedroom once.
You'll be drenched to the bone.
It's true, I did.
If your wow.
time I quite like him.
You is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. Or the times they are.
So, two political hits for you there. Looking back on Bob Dylan's song, the artist wrote the song in an attempt to create an anthem of change and saw relative success as the song went to 9 in the charts. Dylan was inspired by the civil rights movements of the 60s and wanted to create a song symbolic of social change.
After that, we didn't quite get to hear it, but it would have been a bit of UB40, the 1 in 10. Do we have it on the way? Here it comes. Are you ready? The anticipation. There it is. The song title itself refers to the number 9.6 being the percentage of the local workforce claiming unemployment benefits in the West Midlands in the summer of 1918. Now there's a political song if ever you heard one. I like that. It's quite nice and fresh
it's
to have
catchy.
That as an update, isn't it? It's really good fun to have a little bit of music. And,
we've got a bit of movement now. We're actually moving in our seats.
Yeah.
We're getting lively.
So coming up very shortly, I'm going to be taking a wander around the rest of the action that's happening here at Your Election 15. Downstairs, we have a TV studio where that's streaming live onto the internet. And I'm going to be going with a mic, roaming reporter style, and trying to get some people to interview and talk to.
You're going to abandon me. You're going to leave me here in the studio all by myself and go roaming down. He's going to meet some new people and probably distract them from the work they're doing. But it'll be good to get an insight of what's going on.
It certainly will be. Also upstairs, we have an online team. They're working very, very hard at work. And I'm going to be going and interviewing a couple of those people, getting a little bit of a feel for the atmosphere in the room and take you guys on the backstage tour of what's going on here at Your Election 15. So Hannah, I don't know about you, but I actually took part in one of those online quizzes.
Oh, you did? I did one too.
Of the direction of where to vote.
Yes, because I was interested to see who I actually was, you know, meant to be. And so I took the quiz on Facebook. I saw the link. One of my friends shared it. So I did the quiz. And do you know what result I got? And I didn't expect it, to be honest.
What was that?
I got Plaid Cymru.
Okay. So considering you're 100% English?
Yep.
And you were encouraged to vote for the Welsh National Party?
Yeah, so I mean, I don't really know what that means. Am I secretly Welsh? I don't know. Maybe I am. But it was not the result I was expecting, I have to admit. And I assume the Facebook quiz was accurate, of course. But I think most people were confused by the results they received, and that the party they actually thought they did support, they didn't actually get that result on the Facebook game.
Certainly. Well, I think that's another thing that's sort of been trending a lot, is these things online, social media-wise. And something that we want to try and start trending right now is getting you guys in with your suggestions of what songs to play for our political songs. You can tweet us at Your Election 15 using the hashtag YE15. Start those tweets with the word radio and let us know your political songs. We've got a few more for you now, a couple that are coming up. The first one here is A Change Is Gonna Come by Sam Cooke. Here it is. Released in 1964, this one. Ooh.
Soulful.
Swaying. A Change Is Gonna Come was partially inspired by an incident in which Sam Cooke and his band tried to register as whites only motel in 60s America and refused entry. Cooke was also massively inspired by Bob Dylan's release of Blown in the Wind in 1963. He was moved so much that a poignant song about racism in America could come from someone who was not black and was ashamed that he had not yet written something like that himself. And this was a result of that, A Change Is Gonna Come, Sam Cooke. Inspired perhaps by jealousy from Bob Dylan. It's a classic, that, isn't it? Timeless. That's what I was on about earlier. Timeless.
Oh, okay, I get it now. Now I get it.
Of course, I think the next song on the playlist is one that everyone will have expected. I think we've also had some tweets in confirming this one. It's Bruce Springsteen, Born in the USA. I think if ever there was a song that you expected to be on a political playlist,
this
is the one. Apparently though, this is one of the most misunderstood political campaign songs in the history of Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA, which has been used in countless political rallies over the past 25 years. The song expresses anger at America's treatment of Vietnamese war veterans and has a distinctly anti-war message. However, during Ronald Reagan's 1984 campaign for presidency, he used the song briefly as a theme song to his campaign, mistaking it as patriotic. Although, kind of on the surface, it's exactly the opposite. Springsteen, a known liberal, had the Reagan campaign stop using the song shortly afterwards. I can't say I blame him. Another big band on the way, the Sex Pistols, God Save the Queen, likely to be known as punk's most iconic band, the Sex Pistols, released a controversially titled God Save the Queen during Queen Elizabeth's Silver Jubilee in 1977. But if you want to hear that one, I'm going to tease it out of you. I'm going to make you wait, because time is fast approaching midnight. Can you believe it's nearly Friday, Hannah?
It doesn't feel like it.
Two hours down, and we are ready for our latest news update. Mr. Jeff Buckeridge is back in the studio. Let's hit the news.